2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Happy as always to have you on board to the podcast. It's a Thursday, October 10th. We're inching ever closer to game day between BYU and USF. I swear, this week has just kind of dragged its feet. I don't know what the deal is, but it's just dragging. I guess it's that bye week hangover where you're just waiting for a football game once again. The Cougars are traveling to Tampa today. They'll settle into Florida this evening, and it's a big game. Like I've said all week, BYU 2-3, the Bulls 2-3. We're going to be breaking down this game a little bit more in depth today. Talk with Nathan Bond, a USF insider from Daily Stampede, a part of the SB Nation Network. He talked with Charlie Strong earlier in the week and kind of laid out the key talking points to this USF team heading into a game where I think BYU's the better football team, but will that actually manifest itself out on the field on Saturday afternoon at 1:30? We'll find out soon enough. It's a big game for the Cougars. Along with my interview with Nathan Bond, I also have some Aleva Hefo sound. Aleva had some interesting commentary earlier in the week on Jaren Hall and this BYU offense. What's been causing the issues on third down? I thought Aleva was very candid, and he gave a great answer on that. We also talk about BYU's football independence with CBS Sports Network's Dave Ryan and a whole lot more. So settle in, enjoy the show, and make sure to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Leave a rating and a review because it helps the podcast out a ton. As the Cougars travel to South Florida and get ready for their big game against the USF Bulls down in Tampa, it's the birthday for Kalani Sitake. It's a big one, 44 for Kalani.
Salani Kitake.
Yes, Salani Kitake turning 44 today, and big happy birthday to Kalani.
It's my birthday today, yeah!
Or maybe I should call him Kalani.
Kalani Sitake.
Or happy birthday, Salani.
Salani Kitake.
44 years old for Kalani. He's the 35th youngest coach, so he's kind of middle of the road now. When he got hired at BYU, I think he was like 39 years old, 40 years old. Math on the air is never a good thing, I'll admit that. But he's 44 now, and he's about 35th youngest. Some of the youngest coaches in college football right now, I was curious. Sean Lewis at Kent State, 32 years old, really young guy out there. Charlotte's got a head coach in Will Healy, 33 years old. A lot of the Group of Five programs got some really young coaches. The youngest coach in the P5 ranks is, crazy enough, one of the most successful ones in Lincoln Riley. He's only 35 years old, head coach of the Sooners. Some other notables that are young guys, Jason Candle, Toledo, 39 years old. Nick Rolovich, Hawaii, 39 years old. Josh Heupel at UCF, he's only 40. Brian Harsin, he's 42. So Kalani Sitake is 44 years old. Kirby Smart, 42 as well. Some of the coaches that are also 44 in college football, Manny Diaz at Miami, Mike Bobo, Colorado State, Tony Sanchez, UNLV, Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee. So it's kind of the grouping of where Kalani's at. But time goes by fast, I swear. Feels like just yesterday we were talking about how Kalani's one of the youngest guys, being only a 40-year-old head coach, and now he's like the 35th youngest coach. I mean, just so many moving pieces in the college football coaching world, and the coaching hires are skewing younger and younger and younger. I think Florida Atlantic, where Lane Kiffin's at, and he's one of the younger coaches as well. He's only about 44, 45 years old. He's got an offensive coordinator, Charlie Weiss's kid. He's like 27 years old. So coaching hires in college football continue to skew young, and happy birthday to Kalani Sitake, who again turns 44. Now, in the last, you know, Father Time goes by fast, and it's crazy to think the age of BYU football independence is already 9 years old. 9 years. Isn't that crazy? It feels like at times it was yesterday, but also feels like maybe it's been an eternity. I get it on both spectrums. It's kind of like what I tell my wife. I feel like I've known her my whole life, and it was just yesterday when we met. But at the same time, there's moments where you're like, oh, man, this 5-year marriage or 7-year marriage just felt like a little bit longer. It's weird. It's an indescribable feeling. But nonetheless, BYU's independence is 9 years old. And I caught up with Dave Ryan, CBS Sports Network play-by-play voice. He's going to be on the call for BYU and USF. You can hear that interview on the podcast feed. It's a bonus episode. But Dave had some interesting commentary on BYU's independence path, and I want to play that for you right now.
The day that BYU announced it was leaving the Mountain West, and we asked Bronco, of course, what does this mean for BYU football? He called it liberating. He thought it was the best news possible. Now, that was his spin on it. That was his take on it. Look at that decade since. It's so interesting to kind of get a grasp now. Where was the Mountain West back then? Utah, TCU, BYU were all in the Mountain West. That was a loaded conference that had top five, top 10 teams on a regular basis. Now, for Utah, was it better to go to the Pac-12? Of course. Was it better for TCU to go to the Big 12 with revenue sharing and their footprint in Texas and at the Metroplex? Absolutely. I mean, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are bigger leagues in the Mountain West. But for BYU to go independent and try to compete with what Notre Dame does and what Army does. Now, Army plays the academies. Army plays two or three FCS teams a year. They're going to play Navy. They'll probably play Hawaii. You know, that's a different schedule. For BYU, have they been nationally competitive in the top 10 since leaving the Mountain West? The answer is no, that I can think of. And that to me is the big challenge. This incredibly difficult schedule at Tennessee. Of course, Utah and the Holy War to open the season up in a tough game this year for BYU the last couple of years. Washington, USC, and then some really good Mountain West teams, and going to Toledo and going to USF, where, by the way, it's incredibly warm here in Florida. I live in Melbourne across the state. So we're having unseasonable high humidity and rain and high temperatures. So not great timing for the Cougars to come in. But it's a hard thing to do to be nationally relevant. Unless BYU runs the table, like everybody else in the group of five, they're not going to be relevant.
That's a tough thing to hear for BYU fans, to not be nationally relevant, because that has been one of the sad things about independence, is that the first month of the season, BYU is always in the national conversation, but they completely fall off a cliff after they play those Power 5 teams, and especially when BYU's a 2-2, 2-3 football team like they are this week, there's just no chatter about the games that BYU is playing in. And I think that's one of the things that makes independence tough at times. Now, I still believe independence is the right path for BYU right now, because you got to see how the chips fall in the next wave of realignment. I'm of the belief something will happen in college football. What exactly will that be? I don't know. I don't think anyone knows, honestly. Even college football commissioners don't know, at least the ones that maybe aren't as influential like a Larry Scott. They don't seem to know. But there's going to come a time where there's going to be another phase of realignment, and I think BYU's in a better position to launch themselves into a P5 league and highlight their digital attributes, their straight-to-consumer products, things like that, as an independent rather than being in the Mountain West Conference or the AAC. BYU's done the whole group of five thing and won those leagues at a high level. BYU's got 23 conference titles, one of the best and highest number of conference titles for a single program in all of college football, yet they're in the predicament they're in. Obviously, everyone that follows BYU knows it's more than just simply winning games for BYU. Religion plays a huge part. Dick Harmon had an excellent piece on his personal Facebook page and was also on the Cougar Insider's newsletter for the Deseret News, and which is funny that no one recognized that piece that he put in his newsletter was also on his Facebook page, but the Facebook page is the platform that gave him all that attention. But everyone knows that. Independence is the right path for BYU right now. They're making more money, but it does get tough in these stretches of the season. Look, I feel it. I feel it from you, the Cougar fans out there. You're getting to this point of the season, you're like, what are they playing for? What do they got on the line? I think there's a lot on the line with this year's team because you're talking about futures of coaching staffs and futures of the program going forward. I feel like that is something that is legitimately at stake this season, because if BYU goes 5-7 this year, how can you say that's a contract extension worthy year for Kalani Sitake? I don't think you can. So in that sense, there's a lot on the line in that regard, and that's not always fun for fans. They don't want to talk about, is a coach going to get fired or is he not? That means you're just kind of an average football team at best. But, you know, Independence after the first month, it does take a little bit of sales out of the team. And it's tough to expect an undefeated campaign in the first month of the season when you know it's going to be jam-packed with Power 5 teams. It's a tough dilemma. And you hate to hear they're irrelevant, because BYU is a program that in years gone by, in the decades gone by, they've always had a handful of seasons in every decade where they are in the national conversation in November. 2001, they're doing it big and pushing the envelope in the BCS. Hey, Utah, thanks to BYU in 2001, you're able to become a BCS buster in 2004. Or else you would have been what BYU was in 2001 and got completely ruled out. But they opened up a path for non-BCS teams to get to the BCS bowls. BYU pushed the envelope. You know, 2006, 2007, BYU was hovering around BCS at-large candidacy for a bowl game because they were really good and they were nationally ranked. So it's a tough deal. It's a tough thing for Cougar fans. You can hear that whole interview with Dave Ryan on the podcast feed, so make sure to subscribe. It's a bonus episode here on the feed. Aleva Hifo, BYU wide receiver. This Cougar offense, as they look ahead to the South Florida Bowls, they're again traveling to Tampa tonight. They'll be in Florida. I don't know what the nickname of the city of Tampa, but they'll be in Tampa this evening getting ready for yet another East Coast trip for BYU. And, you know, I asked Aleva, how valuable was Jaren Hall playing all the first team reps in spring for Aleva and these wide receivers to develop chemistry with Jaren Hall?
Oh yeah, so these last 2 weeks is not the only time we've been able to develop chemistry with Jaren. He's been there in spring ball. He's been there with PRPs all summer, and he's been taking a lot of reps. And it's nothing new to receivers, nothing new to this offense as well. We know what he can do. We know that he's going to be able to make a lot of plays both with his arm and on his feet.
Has Jaren changed at all since became now the starter of this BYU football program?
Jaren, he's always been a leader. He's always been preparing as if he is the number one quarterback, and I think that's why he's going to be most prepared for this game coming up, and it's not going to be much of a surprise for him going in. And you guys can kind of see when he was thrown into Toledo, one of the toughest situations you can get thrown in. 1 minute left, and he has to score a touchdown. And he handled it very well. He felt like he made good decisions. I felt like he was quick with his decisions. That's the biggest thing. And overall, I feel like it carried over. And he's definitely ready to be a starter in this next quarterback.
There's no doubt about it. Jaren Hall is a cool customer. That guy is no nonsense. He's matter of fact. I like Jaren Hall's demeanor. And it's interesting how a lot of people that have interacted with Jaren quite a bit, they all say he's kind of got that natural leadership abilities. That's a good thing. I think you got to have that if you want to be a successful quarterback, whether you're a freshman, high school, senior in college, whatever, NFL, you got to be a leader, and you got to have those attributes. I think Zach Wilson's got them. I think Jaren Hall's got them too, and I think that's why there's a belief around this BYU football program that even though it's sad that Zach Wilson got injured, there's a belief and there's confidence that Jaren Hall can step right in and maybe have some success that in areas where Maybe Zach couldn't. So it'll be interesting to see. Let's go back to DeLevahifo, though. What did that one drive versus Toledo do for the confidence of this offense to believe that, hey, Jaron can have success?
It's good. It gives him a lot of confidence and the people around him confidence. I remember before we snapped that first ball on that last drive, Jaron had a straight face the whole time. He wasn't scared. He wasn't shying away from it. And he knew that it was his time to make plays and his opportunity. And despite the loss, I felt like he made the best of that opportunity.
He really did. And I thought that final drive was huge for Jaron. And I think that gave him some confidence. I think it would have been a little bit riskier or more questionable outlook on Jaron Hall this week if that one drive didn't look promising against Toledo. Now, keep in mind, the Rockets were in a lot of prevent defense and whatnot, but still, Jaron's throws look pretty good. And I think that gave this BYU offense some confidence that he can step in and perform at a high level. Now, BYU's offense has had a lot of issues on third downs. Last game against Toledo, 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2, 3rd-and-5, you got to pick them up. They're 3rd-and-short. You got to get it done. Even Kalani Sitake said this week, pick them up. Those are the easiest ones to get. You want to live in 3rd-and-short. You got to get those third downs converted. This was DeLevahifo on the issues on third down.
A lot of the stuff is we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We have a lot of pre-snap penalties, and with a lot of pre-snap penalties, it creates a lot of worry within ourselves, and then we start to miss assignments and stuff like that. But the bottom line is we just need to play. When we play and we execute our positions and know that we can beat the guys in front of us, then that's when we're best and most efficient.
BYU's got to get it done. No excuses this week. I mean, USF's defense has got some good athletes, but BYU's offense has got to convert in 3rd-and-short. This was DeLevahifo on that USF defense he's about to face.
Very athletic defense. They have corners and DBs who are listed at 6'1", guys who are lengthy and guys that can run with you. And on the inside, they have just very athletic guys overall. And that's what South Florida has been known for in the past couple years. And it's a big challenge for us and something that we have to try to match when we go against them.
And to get a better idea of how big the challenge truly is for BYU, I caught up with USF insider Nathan Bond, managing editor of the Daily Stampede, part of the SB Nation Network. And you can hear that interview with Nathan Bond, a USF insider, right after this.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
KSL News Radio and kslsports.com, BYU versus USF. I think it's a big game. It's two football teams that are 2-3 and looking to get to the second half of the season and play some good football and start to build maybe some identity for each program. And to talk more about USF and get an insider perspective on the Bulls, bringing on managing editor of the Daily Stampede, part of the SB Nation Network, he is Nathan Bond. Nathan, welcome on in to Cougar Tracks.
I appreciate it, Mitch. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to finally talk to you about the game with the game week.
Yeah, I'm glad to have this game. I remember been about like 5-6 years since this series was announced in terms of a scheduling agreement. I remember at the time it was a exciting matchup, and I still think it is. I think it's a good football game on the Saturday slate because it's two teams that I think are looking to form an identity on each side. Would you say that's kind of a fair assessment for USF?
Yeah, absolutely. From the outsider perspective, just looking toward this BYU game, it seems like, you know, there was an identity with Bronco that maybe Kalani Sitake has not reached yet. I still feel like BYU is still searching for their identity, and it's the same thing over here at USF. They've brought in a new offensive coordinator. Half of their coaching staff has changed, and they're still trying to find who they are. Head coach Charlie Strong came on our podcast during media days this year, and he spoke to us about who are going to be the main characters. Every good team has a main character, and we're still trying to figure out who those main characters are. And we're five games in, we still don't know who it is. So I think trying to figure that out will kind of, for both teams, will kind of propel the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Nathan, for sure. And BYU, you're right. I mean, they have been a program that's lacked in identity. There's been a lot of inconsistencies under Kalani Sitake. And for Charlie Strong, he started out with a huge bang, you know, had an 11-win season and 7-0 last year. And then last season, as you well know, they lost the last six. And then this year, they kind of struggled, 2-3. Their last two FBS wins coming against UConn. But with all that said, 2-3 this year, has there been progress from that six-game losing streak to end last season, in your opinion?
You know, that's a fantastic question. I mean, you open the season up with Wisconsin, and there's all this hype around the new offense, and then Wisconsin just plasters you. And I think Wisconsin may be one of the best four teams in the country. Jonathan Taylor's an amazing running back, and we saw it that Friday night. So it's weird to say we still don't know what this team is. Again, we're five games and we still kind of don't know. You know, the two teams that they've kind of gotten, you know, fully beaten down by are two top 25 teams with Wisconsin and SMU. So we're not sure, you know, if those just teams are just that much better, or is USF, you know, just as bad as they were in the last half of 2018. You know, the Georgia Tech game, they should have won. They had a touchdown call at the goal line that just didn't go their way, you know, a fumble at the goal line. She never stretched the ball out. Keep it in there. Just keep it to you because the bad things always happen when you try to stretch for the pylon. And that's kind of what happened. But I still don't know who this team is. Going back to those main characters, I just don't know who's going to step up. Could it be redshirt freshman Jordan McLeod at quarterback? Who knows? He's had some up and down games. He's shown flashes. But we still don't know what we're going to get from this team week in and week out.
Nathan Bond's our guest from the Daily Stampede, part of the SB Nation Network. And I'm glad you bring up McLeod, Nathan, because that's where I wanted to go next. You know, for BYU fans out here in Utah, the Cougars are getting a new quarterback this week in Jaren Hall. Help us kind of lay out the quarterback situation. How did McLeod become the starter? Because, you know, Blake Barnett was once upon a time the five-star all-world recruit went to Alabama. How have we got to this point where McLeod's the starter now?
It comes down to ineffectiveness. Blake Barnett, for all of the great things that he does, he's still a little bit more of a pocket passer. And unfortunately, the offensive line completely let him down in the first two games. He got benched probably with 2 minutes left in the third quarter against Georgia Tech just because he was just so wholly ineffective because the offensive line couldn't block anything. So when the offensive line, you know, as you know, can't protect, the quarterback's going to look much worse. And I think Blake started seeing ghosts, and you saw that. With Jordan McLeod, you get someone who's a little bit more athletic, still has some arm talent. He definitely doesn't have as strong of an arm as Blake Barnett, but I think he's led the team in rushing three of the four games that he's played in. So there's definitely some areas for excitement. I mean, Jordan McLeod has pulled off some quick Flowers-esque type runs, you know, turning a sack into a 7-yard gain or just even turning a sack into a 2-yard gain. And so those kind of things that was kind of missing from the offense. And at USF, those are the kind of guys you need to succeed. USF never really had the prototypical pocket passer. You kind of need somebody who can do both, and that's where USF has seen the most success, and I think that's where we will see the progression of the offense with Jordan McLeod being able to move around the pocket, roll out, you know, hit the short throws, hit the deep ball every once in a while.
And behind Jordan McLeod at running back is Jordan Cronkite, a former Florida transfer. I'm kind of surprised, Nathan, he hasn't, you know, had more yardage this season. What kind of gives with Cronkite's play so far? Because I thought coming into the year, I thought he was going to be a guy that was maybe one of the top running backs potentially, at least in the AAC statistically and maybe nationally when BYU was going to play the Bulls. What's been going on with Cronkite?
Again, it goes back to the offensive line. We do a film breakdown every week, and it's You know, fans hate to hear this word because they just want to blame on the coaches, but execution. Execution has been paramount for this offensive line. They've just been either been missing their blocks or peeling off of their blocks too early, now opening up holes for Jordan Cronkite to run through. And then finally we saw it against UConn. But again, it's UConn, so how much we can really take away from it as progression is certainly up for debate. You know, talking to people around the program heading into UConn, he's like, it's crazy. We have three offensive linemen who can stay in front of their defender. So that's kind of where the program is, at least in the trenches right now. They need to figure out that starting five. And unfortunately, it's been the two seniors on the right side that have given them the most trouble, right guard Billy Atterbury and right tackle Marcus Norman. But Norman did have a fantastic game against UConn. I think he graded out as one of the highest rated players on the team. So hopefully progress in the right direction. But got to fix the offensive line for Jordan to be able to succeed as a running back.
Defensively, how does USF look? I mean, it seems like from an outsider's point of view, they got some good athletes, and I think that alone can maybe pose some challenges for BYU. How do the Bulls look defensively, in your opinion?
The name you want to know is KJ Sales. He's a North Carolina transfer at cornerback, and I mean, he's been every bit as good as advertised. He will lock down half the field, which allows defense coordinator Brian G. Marie kind of be a little bit more creative with their blitzing, with their coverages, because he knows that KJ Sales will lock down whoever he's guarding. I know BYU has three guys with 18 catches, all averaging over 14 yards a catch, or at least 18 catches. So whoever he goes up against, they're probably going to start with the other two. And that's where I'm worried. Who's going to be able to cover the other two productive receivers for the Cougars? And the secondaries, they've got guys, they just haven't been able to put it together all at the same time. It's kind of been the defensive thing this year. You know, a couple guys will step up, like linebacker Dwayne Boyles made the honor roll this past week for, he had 8 tackles, 3 tackles for loss. It just, the team hasn't been able to put together on a weekly basis. And again, we need to see more consistency from everyone across the board.
You know, Nathan, I'm curious, what are you expecting the fan turnout to be on Saturday afternoon, 3:30 kick Eastern, 1:30 in the Mountain Time Zone? What's the crowd turnout going to look like? Because I know BYU fans are going to probably bring about 3 to 4, maybe 5,000 people. BYU, just they always bring a good contingent of people, but what's the turnout going to look like from the Bulls side of things?
You know, Charlie Strong was really optimistic during the teleconference this week regarding that, because it is homecoming week. So, you know, normally you see the biggest boost during homecoming week because you have all the alumni coming in, their families, their kids, people who haven't been on campus in a couple of years going back to the game. But I think back to 2016, USF faced ECU in a conference game. USF was really, really good 2016 for homecoming, and I think the actual attendance was like around 16,000. I would expect it to be around 16,000 to 22,000. I don't think we're going to see a great crowd, especially with how this team has performed, and a lot of fans have checked out on Charlie Strong.
And when people check out on a coach, Nathan, it begs the question, I mean, is that seat getting warm in Tampa, or is it a situation where Charlie Strong's bosses, they're looking long-term and still all in on him? How do you feel his status is as the head coach going forward?
It's a very loaded question. Thanks in part to former athletic director Mark Harlan, who is now the AD at Utah. Mark Harlan did this awesome thing where he signed Charlie Strong to a contract, but then he also gave him a second contract, basically a secret contract that is basically fully guarantees his entire contract deal. So he signed for 5 years. Every single year is guaranteed. So if USF wants to buy Charlie Strong now and fire him at the end of the year, or, you know, in 2 weeks when, you know, the team's 2-6 or whatever, it's going to cost him about $5 million. USF doesn't have that kind of money to just throw away a coach and then hire a new coach and a new staff and kind of start over. So I think USF is really, really hoping that Charlie can turn it around, finish 8-5, maybe even 9-3, and just kind of get over the hump. But I mean, I'll be frank. 2 weeks ago, I wrote a story on the site saying it's time for Charlie Strong's tenure to end at USF. It just hasn't worked out here. I want to make it perfectly clear. He is one of the nicest people I've ever met. He cares about his players. He cares about the people he interacts with. He's been nice to me when he probably shouldn't have. So it's those kind of things that make him a very likable coach. It just hasn't translated to on-field success, unfortunately.
Well,
it's
going to be I think an important game then, I think, for both BYU and USF, because like Charlie Strong, I think it's a little bit less of a pressure cooker for Kalani Sitake, but Kalani's in a contract year where he's looking to get an extension. So I think both teams got a lot of similarities and looking to get on the right track on Saturday. Should be a fun game regardless. And Nathan, always appreciate the time and continue the excellent coverage at the Daily Stampede.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mitch, for having me on. It's always fun talking to you.
That was Nathan Bond, managing editor of the Daily Stampede, part of the SB Nation Network. Man, shots fired at Mark Harlan, Utah athletic director and former USF AD. Nathan coming in strong at Harlan. Interesting notes there. Did not realize that Harlan set up Strong to a contract that pretty much has him locked in for the foreseeable future. That'll be tough for USF to get out of, because that's why I asked Nathan the question, because it just feels like Charlie Strong is just not the right fit. There's just sometimes coaches that you just know it's not going to work out. It's just not going to achieve more. I still think BYU's got more in them with Kalani Sitake, because there's been flashes of brilliance. BYU's knocked off a USC. They've knocked off a Tennessee. They've knocked off Michigan State. They've knocked off Power 5 teams, Wisconsin's. USF has beat nobody under Charlie Strong. They beat really no one of any value or any significance. The teams that they've beat, it's all been a bunch of deadbeats and teams that didn't go to bowl games. Anyone that they've faced that's went to a bowl game, they pretty much lost. And if they're not playing UConn, they pretty much lose. BYU's got to win this game, no doubt about it. And hey, that crowd attendance, come on, 15, 20, 22, 25,000, that's about it. BYU fans are going to show up about 3,000 to 5,000, I would think. I remember going to the BYU-UCF game in 2014, and there was a good contingent of BYU fans in Orlando. I'd like to think that there's going to be a good number of Cougar fans once again. I mean, heck, there was a ton at Toledo, for goodness sake. If you're going to get people to the Glass Bowl, you got to get people to Tampa, am I right? So who knows? Maybe BYU will outdraw USF. It'll be interesting to see, but I want to thank Nathan for hopping on. Really good insight into the USF Bowls, and it's a program that's not feeling too optimistic about their chances, so BYU has got to pounce on them. I think that USF feels a little bit of confidence from that UConn win, but still, BYU's got to take care of business. I'm really curious to see what BYU does defensively against USF. I think Kalani Sitake, the birthday boy, I think he's going to be more involved on this defensive game plan with Elisa Tuiaki. Maybe take a page from old Bronco Mendenhall and become kind of the guy that's pulling the strings on the defense, maybe. BYU's got to dial up some pressure, plain and simple. This three-man pass rush is nice in theory, and it was a good matchup against USC. But teams now have figured it out. Toledo had success on dropping back eight in the three-man rush. They got to dial up some sort of unique pressures against USF, because this USF offensive line, as you heard, they're not good. They're big. They got some massive dudes. Like, they got a 345-pound guy. They got some 325-pound dudes. They are big and heavy. Doesn't mean they're good, though. Doesn't mean they're good. BYU has got to create pressure, and they got to do more than just a three-man rush or a four-man rush. Let's see five, six, seven guys occasionally and rattle this McLeod at quarterback and see what the Cougars can do. So it should be a fun matchup. We'll talk more about it tomorrow on the day before the game, Friday, game day preview here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. So that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It helps out the show a ton. And make sure to always go and check out KSLSports.com for all the latest in the world of BYU athletics and sports up and down the state of Utah and nationally. Follow me on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Follow KSL Sports on all social media channels. Talk to you tomorrow here on the Cougar Tracks podcast, powered by KSLSports.com.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.